Hi, welcome to another episode of Django Chat, podcast on the Django Web Framework. I'm Carlton Gibson, joined as ever by Will Vincent. Hello, Will.
Hi, Carlton.
Hello, Will. And this week we've got with us Lily Foot. Thank you for joining us, Lily.
Yeah, it's a pleasure.
Thank you for coming on. We always ask, so we'll get into everything about you and all about Django, but we always ask, we always start off about how you found Django in the first place. So, you know, it's kind of the origin story. So let's go with that. How come you're here?
I went to university for mathematics, kind of got burnt out near the end of it and decided to try learning programming. That led to me thinking, picking up Python, and then I was like, how do I make my own website? And I looked around a bit, saw that Django was quite recommended for websites with Python, so tried that, and then ended up turning that into a career.
Okay, so the easy route then, like just bam.
Yeah. I had a couple of junior level jobs, and then ended up in Oxford for a company called Incuno, where there were a bunch of other Django-y people. Mark Tamlin, who was a core dev for a while, and Charlie Denton and George Hickman, and just being around them really kick-started my involvement in open source, and is very inspiring.
Yeah, no, I can imagine. I mean, Oxford's got a kind of Django connection, right? Because I think Torchbox are
Torchbox as well. I never worked with them, but I am aware that they're around.
But there was were there meetups and things like, you know, is there a,
yes,
a scene?
So George, who I mentioned, ran the Oxford Python meetup for a while. He's since moved away, so it's run by other people now. But I remember I tried running some Django Girls events in Oxford. We managed to do it successfully twice, which was good.
Well, that was super. So I remember meeting you in Heidelberg, I think, at DjangoCon Europe. So
yes.
You know, was that your first? Were you been before? Had you been? You seem to be quite well established at that point.
Yeah, so I think the first DjangoCon I went to was Cardiff in 2015.
Okay.
I'd been to some PyCons before that as well. And then, yeah, I've made pretty much every DjangoCon Europe since, except the first online Porto one I didn't go to.
Have you been able to primarily work with then Python and Django throughout your career, or were there any detours into other languages and frameworks?
It's from the start, it's been Python. One of my early jobs was half Django and half Kivy, the Python mobile framework. In recent years, I've got into Rust a bit.
That seems to be the natural progression, Carlton, huh?
Well, it's just, you know, it's not hard enough. Let's make it more difficult. The way I kind of got to know you mostly was you're like, oh yeah, I'm working on this DB defaults ticket.
Which yes.
You've been working on that for a long time, and that's finally gone in for Django 5.0.
Yes. So
can you tell us a bit about it? Listeners don't know what's it for, you know, and perhaps the backstory of getting it in, because you know, spoilers, that ticket was open forever.
Yes, so DB default is defining defaults for a model field so that the database knows that that should be the default. For most of Django, you were able to define a default, but that would only be used at the Python level. So Django Zoram would set that explicitly before sending it to the database to be saved. But now we have a way of telling the database that this is what the default is, and whenever something's saved, the database can put that default in for you. This is really useful if you're doing stuff that's not Django with the same database as the one that you are using Django with. And so it's quite a useful feature. I think I picked it because I was looking for a ORM ticket that was wanted. I think I was looking at the old tickets because that's always an interesting place to look. And by the time it landed, it was the second oldest open ticket.
Fantastic. So I think you've undersold it there. I mean, DB defaults aren't just useful. Like so it's all right. So the classic example is a date now, right? I need a date added now. I need that something. But then if I go in and I happen to be editing not via Django, if I access, you know, via Pandas or I access via any other system, that default is not enforced. And to have it at the DB level saves me a bit of work at the Python level. That's one thing. But I think, you know, if I take my database seriously, which maybe I do, maybe I don't, but there are lots of people who do. If I take my database seriously, having it at the DB level adds a whole layer of security that's significantly better, right?
Yeah, it's I'll take your word for it that I'm underselling it.
Well, it just seems like, oh, well, it's a little, you know, I don't know. I think it's a major feature, no?
Yeah, I agree.
Okay.
Well, and clearly you weren't scared off by the ORM, because usually that's the place that people go to last, not first. Did you also progress through other open source Django things before that, or that was something you were dealing with for work and so decided to just jump right in?
I think the first ORM feature I added was the greatest and least query expressions. And that's something that I needed for work. And then I just kind of stuck around and was like, yeah, let's keep doing ORM things. And I think the vast majority of my contributions have been in the ORM at somewhere or other.
I think there's quite a lot of value in just sticking around, right? I mean, like the DB tickets, how many Django con sprints were you just chipping away at it?
Yeah. Quite a few. I do conference sprints based development. I go to a conference, get very motivated, hack on it for a bit at the sprints and for a few weeks afterwards, and then take a break until the next conference comes around. Helps balance my against burnout and stuff. As to how many, it looks like I assigned myself to the ticket in 2020, though I did CC myself earlier, so maybe I was thinking about it in earlier than that.
I'm pretty sure that in Heidelberg you were working on it already then.
I'm not
100%, but I've got it in my head.
It might be that in Heidelberg I was still working on check constraints.
Oh, yeah, okay. So let's talk about check constraints, because Django defaults in the database, in and of itself, it may, you know, whether you think that's a groundbreaking feature or not, I think it's part of a long line of things that have come in the database, from indexes through constraints, through comments in the DB, through database defaults, through hopefully we're going to get cascades coming up. And all of those are kind of enriching the ORM. And you're probably as capable of anybody who's speaking to that topic.
Yeah. Check constraints is another one where check constraints database defaults, most of the ones that you mentioned, I think, were all actually unlocked by the expressions refactor. Now, when would that have been? Probably around 2015, 2016. expressions, lookups, transforms. I think everything that I've worked on since has been made possible by that.
Right, so it's kind of like 8 years of slow progression building on that change.
Yeah. I think it's probably the most impactful thing that not as many people know about as they should.
Okay, I mean, so I've often thought that the ORM is really hard to get to the details of. So, you know, when you first start off, you can learn to filter, you can learn to, you know, create, you can learn to get or create, you can, you know, do some basics and you can do an exist. But then there's kind of a whole load of other stuff that...
Yeah.
What is the learning pathway there? Like, how do we... It's kind of like there's this cliff that people don't jump off. And how do we help them to do that?
Oh, that's a good question. I think the thing that really helped me was, I mean, one thing that helped me was I got in early-ish, which is a bit tricky for other people. But the other thing is just, I went to a lot of sprints where a lot of experienced ORM people were already. So I was just around them and able to talk to them and just learn from them.
Right.
How to do that if you can't get to conferences, trickier. But you can always watch conference talks and stuff like that.
Yeah, I think there's some gold, absolute gold dust in there. If you go through the past conferences and find the ORM talks, and there's some really, you know, really good ones. I've often wondered if you don't need to know the SQL in order to really understand how the ORM is working.
I will say that for pretty much every database feature I've worked on, I've learnt the bits of SQL I needed to know while working on that ticket. And then half the time I've promptly forgotten them afterwards.
Well, that's why we abstract it into an ORM, right?
Exactly. So,
well, Carlton, to your question, I think part of it might be people, when are they presented with the problems? Either they don't know that it's something that the ORM or the database could solve, or they're just perhaps working on applications that have other needs. I suspect that's part of it. Or maybe I'm just being naive and at a certain scale, all these things come up in your day-to-day work.
Well, let me respond and then perhaps Lily can say what she thinks. But the for me, it often comes up is this sort of N+1 problem where you've got the lazy related lookups and then to be able to work your way around annotations and then, you know, filtering on the annotations, then doing the values to get the group by, and that stuff's not really documented, but you spend a lot of time learning it. And I just anyway, it's, but everyone hits those issues, right?
Yeah, I think it's a case of, you hit them, you search for help. Maybe you post on the forum, or used to post on the mailing list, or ask in Discord, and maybe someone helps, and then you've got something for your toolbox, or maybe it's a colleague at work. I think it's a lot of this is just community knowledge that you pick up by being around and talking to people who've been there before you.
So you think it's just reps? It's just, you know, time on the exercise machine.
Yeah, just and learning to ask the right question, or learning how to find out. I mean, you can also you can look at other people's code. You can dig into the Django code base if you need to. It's how do you learn anything programming?
Yeah, try to bang your head against the wall for weeks.
Where's the textbook? Oh, there's no textbook. I guess I got to create my own through conferences and online stuff.
Yeah. I mean,
anyone knows ChatGPT?
Sorry. I think Django documentation is actually quite good. I think the biggest problem is that there's so much documentation that it's a bit difficult to find the right bit of it, but search engines are not too bad for that.
I think there's a bit of it where it's like, okay, so I've spent a last hour reading about, you know, query API or something, I don't know, whatever. And then it's like, well, what do I use this for? I mean, like window expressions are kind of quite powerful. And there's quite a nice doc on window expressions and how they work. But actually, you need some good examples of how to use them and whatnot that I kind of think are missing. I think there's a gap there for that kind of worked examples of how of these more powerful ORM features. I don't know.
Yeah, I'm open to seeing more worked examples. I don't see how that could be a bad thing.
Fair enough. Touché.
Well, Lily, can I ask, in terms of, is there an area of Django that you seem to focus on in your work? I mean, obviously, we're talking about the ORM, but have you, like, primarily APIs and backend? Have you done templating, any front-end stuff, or do you have a niche?
So the majority of my career has been pretty much Django backend stuff. So anything between the database and the template layer, probably, with a preference towards the database. I have dabbled with front-end, but it is not my comfort zone.
And how much of that is APIs as opposed to a monolith type approach?
I've done both, I think. A lot of what I've worked on is, well, yeah, it's been a mix. There was definitely some API stuff. And then a more recent job, it was very much templating. And I think there were four monoliths all talking to each other. It was quite the legacy code base.
Okay, fair enough. Do you have thoughts? I mean, so one thing we've talked about, especially Carlton has mentioned, is, you know, serialization and Django as framework. You know, if you could wave a wand, how would you provide serialization to Django itself starting today?
That's a good question. I think for what I've done with it, REST framework has been pretty good. There's a few bits where I'm like, okay, that's not quite how I would have chosen to do it, perhaps. Though I can't think of any examples. This is thinking back to the last time I ran into that. But REST framework does a pretty good job. I remember, what was it that I used before REST framework? TastyPy, I think, and REST framework worked so much better for me. It was a more explicit. TastyPy was a bit too magical, if I remember correctly. I like the reasonably explicit nature of REST framework.
I mean, so one thing that comes up when you start talking to people is they like the newer type hint inspired things like Pydantic or Atters or and they like that the quickness of it, the speed of it. You know, where if you've got a very simple case, you know, name, string. Age, you know, integer. Like it's really quick and speedy. But then, you know, same with Atters, same with Pydantic. Look, if you need the more complex cases where you need to add transformers or validators or, you know, whatever on, then you end up adding a field descriptor anyway, and it doesn't end up looking too much different than what you've already got. So it's kind of interesting as to if there's a sweet spot for bringing in the newer sort of syntactic sugariness. But, you know, it's no point throwing out the whole stack for just a little bit of syntactic sugar. So that's kind of where I'm at, mulling it over in my mind. I don't know.
That makes sense. I've not actually really had a chance to play with that stuff. The past few years I've been not actually really doing Django itself that much, though very much in the ecosystem.
Because you've been working on Colo.
Yes.
Right. So tell us a wee bit about Colo.
So Colo, I describe it as a dynamic code analysis tool. It was invented because Will Klopp was frustrated with traditional debuggers, which you have to know where to set the breakpoint. You have to understand your codes a certain amount to be able to use them well. And he was like, I want something that will just give me a lot of that context without having to understand the code beforehand. So he started building Colo, and we met online at the JanCon Europe 2020 online sprints, online conference for in Porto, and we got to talking, and I was trying out contracting at the time, so I so we decided to give that a go, and it went really well. It was a lot of fun working with Python's introspection features and working out how to extract useful information from people's programs without being too slow. And I eventually went full-time with Colo because it was just simpler and I was having so much fun with it. And that's also how I got into Rust as well. We were looking for a way to reduce the overhead of having written in Python originally. Tried Cython at one point, but didn't really get anywhere. But yeah, tried Rust and was able to get that speed up we were looking for, which is really good.
Well, I remember, Carlton, you were there too. Will's talk at DjangoCon Europe this year, and it's, we'll put a link to it. I mean, he got a standing ovation for that talk. I've never seen that at, you know, all the DjangoCons I've been to. I've never seen that before. I mean, it's quite a jaw-dropping like moment to see it in action.
Give a bit of context there. That was because what he did was demoed Colo's ability to generate Django tests for you. So made some requests. So you have Colo running. You know, is it in the VS Code debugger as it's running there? Or?
Yeah. So Colo is currently a Python library and a VS Code extension, and they work together.
Right. So it might just be that you have the library running, and it would capture the request, but it captures the request, and then it's able to say, right, I want test cases for these requests that I've made. Yeah. So you're clicking around in your application, and then it does the whole, gets the test client, configures it with the right parameters, you know, does the request, puts in some dummy asserts, and then you can customize those to check the exact things that you want to check. But it's like, oh yes, that's the really sort of repetitive bit of writing tests for Django, right? And yeah. It just went boom. And it's not one point he made, it's not probabilistic, it's not generative like you might get out of Copilot, where it's quite often wrong. It's fully static, right? It's fully deterministic. It's
The thing I'm focused on at work at the moment is trying to improve the reliability of the test generation and add more features and stuff like that. It's really good when it works, but there's an awful lot of edge cases and stuff. So
right, okay, yeah, I can imagine.
We're hoping that it will that we'll be able to get it into a really solid place in the next few months, and that it'll provide a lot of value to people.
Okay, well, looking forward to that. Any chance of getting it as a standalone app, or is it tied to the VS Code extension?
You want it with BB Edit, right?
Well, exactly. I keep nagging every time I see Will. I'm like, come on, come on.
We have some ideas about having a web UI to it, either a online service or something that runs locally. We have some work in progress stuff around these areas, but I can't say when they'll be launched.
Okay, but maybe I can hold on to my glimmer of hope.
Well, if we step back a second, I'm curious, testing is one of those, you know, it's like testing, deployment, those are kind of the two big things that I always want to check in with people on how they're doing it. How have you seen testing, like how do you test Django projects, and how has that changed over time, if you could speak to that, right? Because that's, I'm curious your example, because I feel like everyone has a little their own flavor of how it's actually done.
Yeah. I mean, I have long been a fan of test-driven development. Maybe not purely strict. I often bounce back between writing a bit of code and writing some tests, but I try to have them inform each other. I think Django testing is often in the integration test realm, especially when you're doing pretty standard CRUD stuff, because the stuff that you really want that fine-grained unit test stuff for is the custom business logic that is not so entangled with the database and so on, which is relatively rare in my experience in Django projects. It's all a bit entangled with the database, at least, so you end up with some sort of integration test in my experience.
It's that fat model thing, right?
Yeah.
I've got a bit of business logic, but I'm going to attach it to my model, so I need my database. So
yeah, or even you nowadays with a lot of the ORM features, you can even push that logic into the database, which means that you pretty much have to have a database as a dependency for the test, at least. I personally am a fan of the request factory and skipping middleware and just putting the request into the view and so on. But for Colo's auto-generated test, we've been relying on the test client a lot because that matches what we recorded better. Because when you record a local request response, that would go through the middleware, so it makes sense to test it going through the middleware as well when auto-generating.
I think it's probably the more common usage pattern as well. I think testing views in isolation is kind of more advanced or more niche.
I do prefer being able to have that extra control and reduce the overhead, but yes, the test client is easy and often good enough.
And then PyTest, I assume, is also part of your kit?
Yes, Colo's own tests are run using PyTest. And yeah, I like PyTest a fair amount. I mostly like the tidier assert, and I use the fixtures a little, but I wouldn't call myself a PyTest expert. There's a lot that is in there that I just don't use.
How about coverage?
Oh, I love coverage. Coverage is amazing.
That completeness, yeah.
Yeah. Frustratingly, for Colo, it's actually really difficult to get 100% test coverage for the same reason that coverage itself really struggles to get 100% test coverage, because the Python API that we use, in our case, sys.setProfile, in coverage's case, sys.setTrace, they're similar with a few minor differences. They can't introspect code that is running in one of those hooks. So coverage can't introspect its own code while it's running. I've had to work around that, and it's a bit frustrating, but oh well. There is in 3.12, the new, is it, I forget what it's called, is it monitoring, which might allow for introspecting that stuff. It's been a while since I've looked at it, so that might have changed. But fingers crossed we can get better coverage out of that.
And you mentioned integration testing. Do you do anything with Playwright or any of those tools, or is that less applicable?
I don't think I've ever used Playwright.
Okay. I mean, that's more for like testing JavaScript and like, you know, did my Stripe payment go through trying to, there were some talks at DjangoCon US about it.
Gotcha.
But I think that's the dominant tool. Andy Knight is very big advocate of it and had a keynote, I think, one of the days on it.
Like I said, I've dabbled in front end. It's not my comfort zone.
Yeah. Have you just to push that once more, HTMX, have you at all played around with that, or is that cropped up in this template only projects?
I have not, but it looks pretty shiny from where I'm standing. Honestly, I think if I had a reason to do some front end, I would look to see if I could use HTMX for it. But my front end is VS Code at the moment, mostly. So it's what works in VS Code, which is a lot of TypeScript.
Oh, fun. So can I ask you a question about Rust? Can I ask you a couple of linked questions? Can I ask you sort of what draws you to it? What do you like about it? What do you find difficult, etc.? And then swinging from there, just in mind, it's like, how do you find it in relation to coming back to Python and then the typing efforts in Python? Because I'll tell you my response, then you can just bang off, is spend all time writing properly typed code in Rust. And it's good fun, it's hard, and you've got the compiler, and it's all this nice. And then I find typing in Python to be deeply frustrating in that it doesn't do, it's all work and no promise. Right? No, or so it feels as I come back. So with that as a sort of blur, how do you feel about Rust? And, you know, what do you like? And what lessons can we draw?
Okay, so I love Rust. It's high level enough in a lot of places that it wasn't too big a change coming from Python for me. The thing that really helped with that as well was that I had a very concrete use case that I understood inside and out. So I just being able to gradually port the Python implementation of Colo into Rust is a really smooth way to learn Rust.
Yeah, you need something concrete, because otherwise the you don't write the types and you don't, you know, and it's a bit like, well.
And I was able to just, okay, what's the smallest thing I can do to have it still working, but more of it's running in Rust? And I just iterated on that. So the amount that I had to learn at each point was actually very small. It's just, okay, what's the next little thing I need to learn? Okay. I have discovered that I really like statically typed programming when it's got all these modern ergonomics that Rust has. Sometimes it's still a bit tricky to work out what the right typing should be, but once you've got it, it really just works. And I absolutely agree with you that the experience of optional typing in Python and TypeScript, to the extent that I've worked with TypeScript, it's just second class compared to something that's thoroughly integrated in language.
I find myself writing Django and think, oh, I'll throw in a bit of typing because, you know, why not? And then I get deeply frustrated with it and just like, no, I'm ripping it out. So I just don't want this. It takes all the fun out of writing Python for me. And it's not that I dislike Rust. I love Rust, but Python typing ain't it.
Yeah. I think I haven't worked on any of the really big Python code bases that want typing, but in my experience, if you're on a small project, typing in Python isn't really worth it.
Will, you have to say something now.
We'll just let that stand. I mean,
I'll give you an example from Neapolitan. Trying to type Neapolitan CRUD view so that the set, when the model class is, you assign them, so it's like a Django thing, right? So it's a view and you assign a class-based view and you assign a model class as the model attribute. And then it's got, at various points, you might use self.object. So, you know, on a create view at the end, you've got self.object, or on a detail view, you fetch the object to begin with and then you render it to the template. So self.object has got the set, is an instance of the type that model is. And there's just been literally no way of typing that in Python without typing something like class, my CRUD view, square brackets, my model, you know, model equals my model, object, my model. And it's like you've typed my model 40 times in three lines. It's like, this is not, I'm not doing it. I'm not making any person write that. I wouldn't write that. No one should ask anyone to write that. It's just, it's not good.
Yeah. In Colo, we do actually still use MyPy and typing. Yeah. And my experience is that like 80-90% of the time, it's just busy work to tell MyPy what I already know. 5% or something, it's okay. MyPy is actively stopping me doing something that I know is right. Yeah. And then the rest of the time, it actually catches a small mistake. Okay, yay. It's... now, maybe the benefits would be more apparent if I was working with more people also working on the code base, but it's me and Will, basically. And I pretty much own all the Python and Rust code, so it's it's just for myself, really, and it's not really doesn't really feel worth it.
Yeah. Okay. Interesting. Okay, let's move out before the lynch mob arrives at the flaming.
No, yeah, I don't have a dog in that fight, but I know that's one of the things that comes up to the steering council all the time. And anyways, but I don't have a...
So I wanted to ask you about Django Nought.Space.
Oh, yes.
You were one of the navigators on the first pilot program that's just finished. So can I ask you about your experience there and, you know, your thoughts? Because from the outside, it looks like a wonderful thing.
Yeah, I'm really glad I took my part. I think Sarah Boyce was the person who... asked me if I wanted to be a navigator, and I said, yeah, all right. it's been good. I had three mentees, and they all got stuff landed in Django, and I'm glad I did. It was good to see them getting this stuff in and having the confidence to work with Django and so on.
Okay. Could I ask, was it a big commitment for you as a navigator? Because I think there's a billion people listening to this podcast who would be qualified to do it. And we've had the organizers on, you know, Sarah come on and talk about it and big it up. So, but you who played the navigator role, what did you have to do? What if, you know, someone's like, well, maybe I could be a navigator.
Yeah.
What's involved?
We scheduled a once a week catch-up call with my Django Nauts, and that ended up lasting about 15 minutes most days. So that was fairly low commitment. The other thing that I did was I tried to keep an eye on the pull requests that they had and give an initial review. I think that went fairly smoothly as well. The time commitment, from my point of view, wasn't too onerous.
So if somebody's in doubt,
go for it. You can always drop out from doing it again if you don't like it.
So will you do it again, or are you going to step out this time?
I have said that I'm happy to do it again. So
okay, because I think one of the things that's been discussed is the idea that not having the same people every time, you know, once, twice, three times, and then step away like a tag team sort of thing. Keep it fresh.
I also said that if they had too many people wanting to be navigators, I was happy to step back. So,
fair enough.
Haven't heard yet whether that is the case. So we'll see.
Okay.
I don't know. I forget what the deadline is, but I suspect there'll be a lot more applicants for this. The first kind of open round than there were the first time. So I imagine there'll be, we should have one of them on to Well, actually, we're going to have Sarah on coming up soon, so we can ask her to give us a recap of it. I think Sarah's going to come on and talk. So,
sorry, we had Sarah B before.
Oh yeah, sorry, yeah, two Sarahs, two Sarahs.
So many Sarahs. We're going to have Django Sarah-con.
Yeah. Nice. One question I had for you, actually, I don't know, on ORMs, and it sounds like you primarily work with Django, but have you had a chance to look at any other web ORMs and take inspiration, or was that part of your process, or have you been mainly fighting with SQL and Django?
It's mainly been SQL and Django. Looking at other work in this space is something that does sound valuable, but it's not something I've got around to doing.
Yeah, fair enough.
Yeah, I'm just a bit too focused on, okay, what's the thing right in front of me, or I'm taking a break until the next conference, depending on my mood.
Yeah. Well, it would be, I mean, Carlton, you can probably maybe speak to this. I mean, SQL Alchemy is certainly, historically has been spoken of as having some features that the Django ORM does not, but I don't know if it's as active as the Django ORM is. I suspect not, but I can't speak to that.
Yeah, who knows? No, I'm not a big ORM depths expert, so I've used SQL Alchemy a few times and thought, yeah, it's an ORM. I think the big thing is that the Django ORM is slightly more objecty, if that makes sense. SQL Alchemy doesn't hide away the SQL quite as much. Aware that you're building a select query, or you're aware that you're building whatever. Whereas Django, it's not quite so clear. So I don't know. I don't.
Yeah, I think Django's slowly moving more in the direction of matching the SQL a bit more explicitly. I mean, all the expressions are now more directly named after the equivalent SQL concept, and check constraints, that's named after the database name for it. Whereas early stuff like filter is more our own naming. So there's some value in matching up well to the database concept that you're implementing that we've been doing in more recent years.
Well, I have one more, Carlton, and then I'll let you fill up the time. But so Colo, obviously so we had David Kramer from Sentry on a little while back, and he was talking about how Sentry developed initially as an improved Django debug toolbar. And in a sense, Colo is also like that. So my question to you is, beyond where it is to now, where do you see potentially going to, you know, in the future if things keep going swimmingly?
My personal wish list for Colo is I want us to be a go-to tool for local development. I want us to have a good story for not just Django, but Flask, FastAPI, maybe even Scientific Python, though I don't know if that's possible. That's where I'd like to go, but I don't know if it's where we'll end up going. I'd like to be able to have a way of people contributing plugins to it so that we don't have to do all the integrations. That's something that's always simmering in the back of my mind. How are we going to do that? But at the moment, the test generation is our main focus, I think. So that's where a lot of our thinking and development time is going at the moment.
Yeah, because the visualization and the drilling down and the jumping to the code, that's all in place, right?
I mean,
You know, it's quite an impressive little tool, to be honest.
Carlton, do you have any?
Well, no, I mean, just thinking on that, the question is, at some point, there has to be a business
that model too,
towards
yes.
it. So it's moment Colo is free. And I guess that the sort of the big one is teams, right? It's to be able to provide some kind of help at a team level where, you know, start up 5-10 developers, they can get a subscription,
yeah.
give it to everybody. And
Yeah, we have some small dabblings in that direction, but nothing very concrete at this point. But yes, I would love for Curlo to be self-sustaining.
Yeah, well, that gives it the longevity, no?
Indeed.
Well, we've been not doing nothing but asking you questions. Is there anything you wanted to speak of since you're on? Any things that are of interest or with work or the community you wanted to mention? I know that's a big one I just threw at you, so it's fine.
We've mentioned a lot of what's on my mind at the moment. I guess there's been a fair bit of conversations on the forum and Discord recently about consensus and how stuff that a lot of suggestions for changes to Django going at the issue tracker, and a fair number of them just get accepted, and that's great. But when they're rejected, the response is, okay, if you don't disagree, take that to the forum or used to be the mailing list or whatever. And then it feels like it can be a lot more of a draining process to try and make your case and get something in. And I think my wish list for Django going forward is that we make that less draining on contributors somehow. When they've got an idea and it's not immediately met with, yes, let's do that. Find a way to make that smoother, and I'm hoping that we can improve that experience somewhat in the future.
Yeah. The default has been for many years that a sort of change required a consensus in favour of it.
Yeah.
And so the burden is on the new feature.
Yeah.
So the default is no, basically. I mean, to basically any change.
Yeah.
And that can be massively frustrating when that's the feature you want.
Yeah.
I
think one of the things that has kept me around in Django is I've largely only picked things to work on that were already accepted. If I'd come along with a particular feature that I particularly wanted in, but I was met with resistance, I might not have stuck around so easily.
Yeah. So just to the flip side of it is, of course, the stability.
Yes. Right?
Is the reason why the historical policy was, requiring the consensus for the change,
yeah,
was the keeping Django stable. And I was on the Django developers mailing list searching for some things, and I came across a thread from, 2015, where there was massive gripes about the massive churn between versions and the difficulty of updating.
Yeah.
And looking back now at 2023 to something from 2015, you think, there's no churn. Like, you might, I have to tweak a setting and I've got 2.5 years to tweak that setting before, yeah, it becomes pressing. It's really not, it's not a burden. And most times it's pip, pip install dash u Django, run your tests. Oh, it's done. Look, I'm on the latest version. Took me 10 minutes. That wasn't the case.
Yeah.
That really wasn't.
Yeah. I have some memories of upgrading back in the 1.x days. I do remember it, but I think perhaps we've overshot and gone a bit too conservative now.
Yeah, possibly.
Well, to what you were saying, Lily, one thing I've taken heart with is Paolo has this idea of Django sprints.
Oh, yes.
Which he just posted another article about pushing that forward, because, there's no reason why it has to just be at the end of DjangoCon conferences. And so perhaps I hope that becomes a thing, and that could be a way where someone, even if it's turned down, they can still meet up. And, there's nothing like in-person progress to make progress or, talk it out in a way you can't, even on the forum. So perhaps that's one way.
Yeah, I hope so. There's been a number of things recently. I mean, I guess grand scheme, actual raw numbers, probably not that many, but it feels like a lot because they generate so much discussion and it feels like such an uphill battle.
Yeah, it can be. It can be just like long grass and it's like, how do I move this feature forward?
Yeah.
It's not sure I can, or not sure I can quickly.
And that first interaction is so important when you just, it takes so much effort and self-belief just to put it out there, and then you're hypersensitive to the response.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, yeah, it can be crushing even when someone who's just busy just says no.
Like, yeah.
And they don't, so there is some, but you know, Django Nut programs and others, we can see that there are people and faces and the community is friendly, even if the interfaces aren't always as friendly. Actually, that was one of the points that Sarah Boyce was making about, she's a big fan of the Discord and how that sort of interaction more aligns with, I guess, modern communication and certainly is more friendly than just an email service, email listserv.
Yeah, I definitely agree. I also think that for better and for worse, Django has a reputation of, I mean, for better, it's really stable and slow moving, but also for worse, it's maybe
really stable,
missing out on opportunities it could be providing to. Is Django going to continue to be picked for new projects? Some people I've talked to think, no, you're only going to pick Django if you already know it or it's a maintenance.
But people have been saying that for a decade
and a half.
What do
they pick instead? Is there a default, though?
Probably something like FastAPI or something even not in Python. But, I mean...
Yeah.
The
story is as old as Django. you know, like...
It's like a Hacker News post. Django still exists and it works.
Yeah.
There's something valid there though, right? I mean,
yeah.
I mean, certainly there's just the marketing of Django. This is one of the topics on the members forum about just the website and things, which there is work being done. So yeah, how do we get across? I mean, that's one of the things I've been most heartened by is Sarah Boyce has really taken the lead on the upgrades to Django section on the Django News newsletter. And just showing, it's so active. I feel like it's 12 to 15 a week of changes. And, you know, so some sort of marketing sheen on what's actually happening. But because we're mainly volunteers, we don't have the muscle to do it or the time to do it.
I'm hopeful that there is currently a bit of an influx of energy happening to Django. And that will lead to it continuing to flourish.
It certainly feels like it for me, right? I mean, there was this, or being on the board during COVID, it definitely felt a little bit like end of days holding on. But, you know, now that we have the conferences and everything and new initiatives and new people, and so many people are going out for the board now that there's the new board, that there's even some discussion of perhaps we should expand the board or, you know, find a way to take advantage of people who want to contribute in a way that we're not.
I had to look at the candidates and I was like, I have no idea how to rank these. They all look amazing.
Yeah, right? I mean...
Yeah. It's a good,
like,
good,
really strong
good position to be.
Carlton, you had something to say. I interrupted you about...
No. I just totally, you know, I agree. I think it's... I don't really buy the old Django thing, mortal danger line. I've been hearing that for 15 years and it's
yeah.
no truer
it's,
today.
It's more
it
about
then.
The perception, I think.
Independently of, sure, but Django's been old and sort of old, the old fuddy-duddy for, you know, for a long time now. And I don't buy it's there's an existential threat. I look at the changes that come in every version. I think, yeah, this is positive. I do hear, you know, what Lily's saying about, you know, can we tweak the way we discuss the features? Can we think about ways of pushing forward? I think, you know, there's not enough there's too much of a barrier to getting to a full, sort of formal depth, this Django enhancement proposal, that it should be a lightweight thing. It should be, look, here's my proposal. Can we discuss it? Can we feedback on an actual written spec? Because, you know, if you want to make a major feature change in any project, to write up a little spec's not a big ask, right? That should be easy. We should be encouraging people to write in third-party packages. We should be saying, look, this is what I've done. How can I pull it in? And yeah, we should be open and, you know, let's do all of those things. That's all great. I don't buy that Django's an existential threat if we don't. But yes, let's take the new energy and let's go with it. And it is wonderful to see just so many young faces. Like, we went to that first conference back after the COVID two, three years where we didn't have it. And then we were back and it was like, yes, all the old faces. Yeah. Yes, all the new faces too. And it was like, oh, wow, yes. And I said so many times this year that I'm as excited about Django and where it's going as I've been for a long, 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 long time. I think it's a really healthy place that we're in, and that's just wonderful.
Well, I do have a shout out to DjangoCon US, which I don't think either of you were at. I heard many people saying it was the most diverse in all respects attendance that they've ever had, in terms of there was huge numbers of people from Africa, people from different industries, it wasn't the largest DjangoCon US we've ever had, but the breadth of people and backgrounds and experiences certainly felt and seemed to be the largest yet. So that was, I took a lot of heart from that, as did, I think, most of the people there.
Yeah, and DjangoCon Africa as well.
Right, we need to have someone come on, and maybe we can ask Mariusz or one of the organizers to speak to that. Well, I think we're pretty much out of time at this point, unless there's any... Is there anything we didn't cover, Lily, or managed to throw enough questions your way?
I mean, there's always more stuff that could be talked about, but I'm hesitant to open some cans of worms, so maybe another podcast.
Okay, well, we'll have links to everything we discussed, especially Colo for Django, which everyone should check out. And is there any way that would you like, if anyone doesn't already know about it, who's listening and tries it, is there a way to provide feedback, or what would you ask someone to do who downloads it and for the first time?
Yeah, we've got a small Discord of our own, which is mainly used for people coming and asking questions for help. We have some documentation. If the documentation's unclear, please let us know. It's something that... I want to be good, but I'm not a technical writer, so we have an issue tracker as well. I think you can also schedule time with Will to come and actively help you get started or work through a particular problem or something like that as well. There's lots of different options.
Thank you for taking the time. We've been planning to do this for quite a while, and so yes. I'm very pleased that it came together. And
yeah, thank you for coming. Yeah, really good.
DjangoChat.com, links to everything, and we'll see everyone next time. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.